You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Friday edition of Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is part, of course, of the Locked On Podcast Network, and it's brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watching. This football season, of course, is a lot different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you're watching this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generation that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. And today on the show is Lions Day. We are going to preview the Lions. We're going to talk about some scheme stuff. We're going to talk about some players to watch. If you want a more general sense of the Lions game, I usually like to, in this show, kind of hone in. If you want a more general sense of how things are going, you should listen to yesterday's episode, which is Crossover Thursday with Matt Derry, and he kind of explains the Lions in general. But today, we're going to kind of hone in on some really specific things I think the Vikings can take advantage of to try and win this game. But first, let's talk a little bit about what's in the news. So this show is a little bit coming out a little bit later than it usually does. My apologies for that. I was a little under the weather yesterday, feeling fine now. But the advantage of that means we get to see a new injury report, so I can actually talk to you about the entirety of the injury report. And on that injury report, there's no Cameron Dantzler, there's no Holton Hill. Harrison Hand is questionable, and there's also no Mark Fields, who is dealing with that punctured lung, which means the starting corners are going to be Jeff Gladney, possibly Chris Boyd, and they might even need to get Chris Jones, who was sort of a practice squad reclamation developmental type, maybe a special teams guy. So the Vikings are still really, really down to their depth at corner. Harrison Hand might play too if he can play, but he's been dealing with an injury as well. Also, notably, Pat Elflein did not practice on Friday. He practiced Wednesday and Thursday. Of course, he's in the 21-day injured reserve activation window. What that means is last week they put him in this kind of 21-day observation period where he can practice, he can do stuff with the team. He can't play till you activate him to the active roster and take him off of IR. And if at the end of that 21 days you don't put him on the active roster, then he reverts back to IR and he's there for the rest of the year. So he's kind of in this decision period. And him not practicing on Friday is kind of a concerning sign, because it means either there was a setback, he's not as ready as they thought, and they won't be able to have him out there for the Lions game. They could have him out there for the Lions game. There's other reasons you don't have a guy practice on Friday, like you're just trying to, you know, make sure he can take it easy or something like that. But I don't think you would take that kind of action if you thought that there was a chance that next week could pass and Pat Elflein doesn't come back. So either way, it looks very much like we are going to have the Dakota Dozier, Ezra Cleveland guard duo that we have been having. That, of course, worked out a lot better on last Sunday than it did against Atlanta. But these things are, you know, they remain to be seen. There's also a little bit of drama in this one when it comes to Mike Zimmer and his former edge rusher, Everson Griffin. So on Thursday, Everson Griffin did a media availability where he was told that Mike Zimmer, in his Thursday media availability, said, and I quote, "Everson was a good player for us. I wish him well, just not this week." And that seems like a fairly boilerplate thing to say, but Everson took it personally that Zimmer said good and not great. And he went on a whole tirade about this. He said a lot about it in his media availability. He said, and quoting again, "This is the best I've felt in a long time, and I got a little frustrated when I read that comment, what Zimmer said. Oh, Everson was a good player. Like, Coach Zimmer wasn't just a good coach. He was a great coach to me. So for him to call me a good player, that kind of hurts my feelings." And he went on to say kind of more to that effect, you know, "Not putting respect on my name. I miss you guys so much. How could you disrespect me like that?" And he seemed like really, really upset. And he even took to Twitter and started like arguing with Vikings fans about, you know, when Vikings fans kind of said, "Well, he didn't like mean that. He just was like saying stuff. And he didn't like mean to call you like good, not great. He just like decided to use that syntax." And Everson started saying like, "No, he said what he said. And, you know, he can take it up with me. You don't have to." It was a very interesting thing. But here's what I think about this. Zimmer definitely did not mean to insinuate that Everson was only good, not great. And he even clarified in a media availability on Friday, like, "Oh, I didn't mean anything derogatory. Everson's terrific. What do you mean? And he cleared it up like the second he was pressed on it. So I don't think that Zimmer like meant anything derogatory, and Griffin took it like in that way. And I kind of think this is a thing NFL players do a lot. Everson is definitely the kind of person to like look for bulletin board material, you know, look for something to get you motivated and let yourself fall into it and get mad so that you get motivated for the game. That's kind of part of his like process. That's why he was so great for the Vikings, is because of that that mentality. And I don't really think there's anything like too personal about this. I think he's just looking for motivation. And Zimmer said something that he I guess was dumber than he thought. And then when he was asked about that, he was like, oh yeah, no, I didn't mean that. Of course he's great. Like, he's terrific. What do you mean? So this is all a whole bunch of nothing, but Everson Griffin isn't going to let it be nothing, because if he does let it be nothing, then it's less of a motivating factor. And why would he concede a motivating factor like that? But that's all I really think this is. You know, he had all kinds of kind words to say about Zimmer and his time in Minnesota. And he was just kind of like, perturbed by, I guess, this particular choice of adjective. But enough about all that. Let's talk about the Lions themselves. And in addition to Everson Griffin and Adrian Peterson and Jayron Kearse, there's a lot to break down about this team. So let's dive into it. I want to start with Stafford. So obviously Stafford is on COVID-19 IR. He had a high risk exposure event, and he's kind of up in the air whether or not he's going to be off of that list in time to play the game. Matt Derry yesterday kind of thought that he would. He thought that he would be able to kind of quarantine for the requisite 5 days, hop on a jet and fly over to Minnesota and be there in time for the game. And so now you're basically getting Matt Stafford without a week of practice, which I guess kind of helps. But I mean, he's been there for a gajillion years. He's been, you know, part of that offense forever. So like, it's, I don't think that's going to be a huge factor. And Stafford this year has been the Matt Stafford we know and love. He's been accurate. He's had a strong arm. He's definitely still playing at the level that we have come to be familiar with Stafford. He's throwing awesome, accurate passes. And, you know, when he can get the help from his line, which he has been, and, you know, the wide receivers, he's kind of down. He's down at Kenny Golladay this week. They still have Marvin Jones. They have Marvin Hall, who kind of came out. They still have like Amendola, TJ Hockenson. And when those guys are playing well, like, this Lions offense has been pretty good this year. So here's like, do not underestimate these Lions because it's Matt Stafford and because the Vikings have owned Matt Stafford over the years, especially like due in large, in no small part to Everson Griffin, who's obviously no longer part of the equation. And the other thing is, because their O-line is pretty good, you know, I think the D-line kind of played out of their skull on Sunday and it helped the coverage like a lot. I don't know if you're going to get that game again. This is a good offensive line. You know, the Packers were starting backups. Rick Wagner had a terrible game. He was playing really, really poorly and making things a lot easier for guys like DJ Wonnum. And I don't think that that the Lions are going to give the defensive line that easy of a time versus what the Packers did, which was great. It was very out of character for the Packers and it helped us, but I don't think this D-line is suddenly going to be a big pressure monster. They're going to have to cover again, and that's going to lead to all the same things. You got a bunch of, you have no corners and you have to cover. It's time to call a bunch of cover two and hope they don't figure it out and start dicing you. I kind of think that they're just going to have to keep up with a good offensive performance from the Lions. I don't think that the Vikings' ability to make stops is there very much, and it's going to be one of those things where the Vikings are going to have to score on all but two of their drives so that they can beat the Lions, who scored on all but three of their drives. I think that's going to be the kind of thing we're dealing with here. But hey, there's a lot about this football season that's been a lot different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you decide to watch. Personally, I'm still watching for the Vikings to win. I'm still watching for, you know, I want to come back here. I want to rattle off three wins, get back to 500, and see if they can't make a season out of this. But if you disagree, maybe you're just watching to see about how their draft pick ends up, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These are the passionate fans with a real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. All right, so I'm actually a lot more fascinated with the Lions defense, and here's like what this game is going to come down to is, can the Vikings offense keep up with what the Lions offense does to our defense? Our defense, I don't think we can rely on them in this game. I don't think they match up very well with the Lions at all. I think they're going to be able to throw all over us, and they won't need to rely on a running game that's been pretty poor for them. And you know, they've been using Adrian Peterson a lot too much. And you know, at this point in the season, you know, Adrian Peterson had a couple of good games early in the season, but that's kind of one of the things about age when it comes to running backs is, as the season wears on, you get a little bit less effective. And I think we're seeing that with Peterson, but they still have like DeAndre Swift and stuff, and maybe they can run on the Vikings, but they can definitely pass on the Vikings, so they might not need to. The intrigue for me is if the Vikings will be able to keep pace on the other side of the ball, and a huge part of that is the secondary for the Lions. Now, I've always thought the secondary for the Lions, you know, when they had Glover Quinn and Darius Slay and all these guys, and Tracy Walker was playing really well, like, they had a really underrated secondary for a long time. All those guys are gone. But they do have a top three overall pick in Jeff Okuda, who was supposed to be this, this juggernaut cornerback that was supposed to one-to-one come in, replace Darius Slay, and the Lions weren't supposed to miss a beat. That hasn't really happened. First few games were a total catastrophe for Okuda, as we kind of saw with like all the rookie cornerbacks, and the fact that the Vikings had to rely on two of them was pretty unfortunate, but that kind of happened with all the rookies, and Okuda being poor there doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be poor in this game, but he has still had a lot of issues throughout. And like Matt Derry said yesterday, he has gotten better, but it hasn't been good enough to be like, good. He's still processing very, very slowly, and he's still kind of gullible. And so what I mean by that is that he is he's falling for a lot of deception. He's like biting on play action and stuff, and he's biting on double moves and all that stuff. And he's now been kind of scared, and he's playing like really far off. We've seen this a lot in Minnesota, and it's happening to Jeff Okuda, the thing where you get beat deep one too many times, and Okuda has been beat deep plenty of times, and then you start playing way too far off, and you start to lose out on curls and stuff, and you're not playing the right landmarks and zone technique and stuff like that. That's all happening to Jeff Okuda. He's an outside corner, so you can't exactly do the like take advantage of him in the slot thing. However, their primary slot corner, Daryl Roberts, has also been kind of problematic, so you might be able to get on some real, like, I think what you want to do is just run a bunch of, like, really good zone-beating concepts and force them into playing man coverage. And before I go into what those zone-beating concepts are, and, like, kind of what I mean by that, I want to talk really quick about their pass rush. Obviously, they're going to have a juiced-up Everson Griffin. I have to expect a pretty good game out of him, even though he wasn't great in Dallas, and Dallas was actually really, really upset with him, and, like, if you listen to anything about Dallas, like, they were really happy that they were able to offload him at all. I think he's going to be juiced in this one, right? Like, he's found his bulletin board thing. He's coming up against his old team. It's going to be fun. I think we're going to see vintage Everson Griffin here, and I would expect that absolutely. And if we don't, then that's just gravy. But they also have Romeo Okwara, who's their other edge rusher, and he has had a really, really productive season. He has 30 pressures so far on like 170 snaps or something like that, which is a really, really good, that's a top five pressure rate when you include sacks as well. So that is something to fear. And so going in and kind of watching how he wins, he's also a bit of an awkward matchup for the Vikings because he's a power rusher. He kind of reminds me of a Fadi Odenebo rushing a little bit, where he's going to get through you. He wants to try to, you know, establish that half man relationship I've been talking about this week. That idea that, you know, you're only trying to get one shoulder of them because it's easier to beat one shoulder than two shoulders, right? And then he uses his power, he uses a long arm, and he uses his strength. He has a lot of strength and burst and power. He's not particularly agile, and he's the guy that's going to go through you instead of around you, or he's going to try to manipulate you and stuff. That kind of thing against a tackle like Brian O'Neill is a bit of a concern, because Brian O'Neill does a lot better against these quick rushers that are trying to get around you, right? But when he just has to like hold up an anchor, then there's a strength issue with Brian O'Neill that can kind of get highlighted. So I think that's a little bit of a concern. But that said, Brian O'Neill doesn't get like worked by these guys. He just plays a little bit worse. And he hasn't had the greatest season. So there's a little bit of a concern here, and it puts you in an interesting sort of decision point. This is a decision the Vikings have to make now that I don't think is a very easy one, and I have a tough time knowing which is the right call. They either have to be more conservative about it and either put in extra protection, keep a tight end to block or something, but that hurts your passing concepts. And again, you're going to be in a shootout, so you're going to need to score a lot and score fast. You can't do this like, oh, just, you know, avoid disasters and win 17-13 in this game. You're going to have to score, and you're going to have to score aggressively. And so the other option is to just leave those guys on an island. And if you think they can handle it, then that's obviously the better thing. You can just say, like, Kyle Rudolph, just do whatever route we're going to do, and you don't have to chip in front. We don't have to adjust our timings. We don't have to slow down the play. We don't have to, you know, the tough thing about chipping is if you're going to throw to the guy who chipped, it takes longer for that guy to hit his landmark because he had to spend some time chipping, and then everybody else has to pass protect for longer. Or you could just leave them on an island. And if you think that Riley Reiff and Brian O'Neill can handle Romeo Okwara and Everson Griffin, which I'm really, really on the fence about, I don't think this is like some crazy, you know, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa kind of, this isn't going up against Danielle Hunter, but this is, I think, pushing them. And if they can handle it, then you get rewarded, but there's a risk to that, and that could be where the disasters come in, and then, you know, that's how they hang 40 on you because Kirk Cousins did some fumble rooski. I really don't know what I advocate. I mean, I don't know. If I were the coach, I would kind of go high risk, high reward because you're 2-5, but I would definitely understand if they decided to do some chipping and stuff and really respect these edge rushers. I think they're worth respecting, especially Everson Griffin, who's all juiced up. You definitely don't want him to come ruin your day. So the last thing I want to talk about is I want to go back to the zone beaters and stuff. So the Lions run a lot of cover three. They run a lot of eight-man coverages as well, which is a really, really dumb thing that they do. And they also haven't gotten a lot of interior pressure. They've been really, really struggling there, which might be how they use Everson Griffin. And in that case, then you have to keep running backs into block or something like that. But they haven't gotten a lot of interior pressure at all. But their base coverage is cover three, which is, you know, three deep people and then four underneath and usually four rushers. And then you kind of build variations off of that if you want to blitz somebody or do some tricks or whatever. So a typical cover three beater, there's a lot of cover three beaters. What I want to talk about today is something I actually talked, if you've been a listener last year, you might remember this when we talked about the Dallas game last year. And it is something that the Vikings use a lot. It's something Kirk Cousins is very good and is very good at doing. It's a read that he can do very well. And it's a very good cover three beater. The thing about cover three is because you have three people deep, you can't have two people, or you can't have two underneath defenders on the left side. So if you think about the field as like left, middle, right, and then high, low, and medium, and you kind of divide it into like those nine things, if you have somebody covering deep left, right, because you have three, so all the deep parts of that are covered, you have to have an underneath cover man choose between middle and low. So you can actually get them with a medium low, and you can kind of high low stretch that guy. You can either have somebody run a medium route and then a low route, and then you choose, you know, throw out the guy he doesn't cover. And then to kind of further complicate that, you can make sure that the other linebacker isn't coming in to help by throwing somebody at the middle. That's called a triangle read. So the way it goes is you would have somebody like a tight end, say Kyle Rudolph, run a quick curl route directly to the middle of the field. And then if either of the two linebackers on either side of him crash inward, then you look to the outside. That's where you have a high-low stretch on that underneath defender. You either have like Dalvin Cook on a swing pass or something like that, or you have somebody running a quick out that is going to be underneath the deep person, and there should be enough space between them where that deep defender is going to have to choose between one or the other. Kirk Cousins is very, very quick at reading these, and the Vikings have been very good against cover three teams using this because this is a bit of a cover three beater. And if they don't want to fall into their zone coverage things, you know, the Lions like to use a lot of man coverage, but they don't have the horses to do that. And then you end up with Justin Jefferson one-on-one on Darrell Roberts, and I think you could just feast from there. So I definitely think the Lions are going to score points. I think the Vikings are going to score points. I think we're going to be in for a fun one. But you guys have some predictions of your own, some bold predictions that I asked for on Thursday before recording this. So we're going to get into those. We're going to revisit the bold predictions from last time. So stick around for all that. All right, let's hop into some of these bold predictions. And the first thing we have to do is we have to revisit the ones from last week. So the first one was Kai said Vikings won't score a touchdown because Kirk gets severely injured in the first quarter. Love that you were wrong on that, but I love the boldness. Adam Nelson said Kirk Cousins, 4 carries, 30 plus yards and a touchdown. Man, when the win came out, I thought you had this. I really did, because I thought like, oh man, he's not going to be able to throw. He's going to have to do like weird bootlegs and stuff. But it turns out they didn't need to run with Kirk Cousins because Dalvin Cook ran everything. There was one, I don't remember if I read this out loud or not, but Tyler Fornes said Aaron Rodgers throws for less than 250 and throws a pick because Zimmer knows how to scheme. And you got really close. I think Rodgers had like 290 or something like that, but no pick. But Zimmer really did know how to scheme it. I mean, the cover two thing worked very well. They weren't doing that in week one. They had started doing that weeks ago, and it worked really well in this instance. And it helped the corners not have to, you know, be relied on as much. And the defensive line played a little better, which helped too, but you got really close, and in spirit you definitely had like the idea. It just didn't quite go under 250. Bradley Norse said our corners take a step up after the bye. We can hold Devontae Adams to less than 5 catches and 50 yards. I think he had like 7 catches for like 56 or something like that, so you were really close as well. The corners didn't really step up because they all died in the game. They all left the game, but I again, in spirit, you had the idea. Joe E said Vikings win 24-0 with Jalen Holmes getting 4 sacks. Didn't quite get there. Paul said Vikings score on a fake punt / field goal. One of these times, one of you guys is going to make a weird special teams prediction. It's going to come in and I'm going to include it every single time, but not this week. Chris said Kirk Cousins rushing touchdown longer than 10 yards. Same idea. I kind of thought you might have had a shot at that one with the wind and with how weird that game was getting, but not quite. Senor Scoliosis, I love it, says Rodgers throws 2 picks in the second half to Harrison's, 1 to Smith, 1 to Hand. No picks in the game, sorry. But with those fourth downs, those Hail Marys and stuff, I thought maybe there was something to that. And Harrison Hand definitely got more run than I thought he would with the injuries. And then Noah Morris said, Vikings get their first special teams touchdown in the year. One of these times you guys are going to get it. Let's move on to the bold predictions for this week. I want to start with Tanishka, who says KJ Osborne scores on special teams and offense. One of these times, you're going to get a weird special teams one. I will give this to you if he just gets a special teams one, but special teams and offense would be awesome. He's not getting like any offensive reps, though, so that's a much harder one to bear out, but like we're going to get this special teams touchdown, you guys. We're going to keep at it all year. We are going to get it. The next one comes from my favorite display name. I've seen one of my favorites all year, Dalvin and the Cook Monks. Who says, I don't want to actually verbalize this because I don't want to see it happen, but I think you'll see where I'm going. Griff is mad and wants vengeance. Kirk hasn't been injured in years. Like I said, don't want this to happen, but I have concerns. I agree with you. I don't want this to happen, which is why I'm reading it out loud. It's the reverse jinx, baby. Let's go. But that is very bold. Again, Kirk hasn't been hurt in years. I also kind of think there is something to, like, the vast majority of quarterback injuries happen because, like, the bad ones are like non-contact. Sometimes you get a concussion, sometimes you get like what happened to Aaron Rodgers in his collarbone a few years ago, but I feel like the worst quarterback injury is the non-contact knee thing, you know, the Teddy injury. And there's a little bit less, you know, I think that with the rules protecting quarterbacks and stuff, I think the idea of, oh, he's super mad and he's going to light up Kirk Cousins so bad he gets injured. He might light up Kirk Cousins so bad he fumbles, but an injury coming off of that specifically doesn't feel like, to ease your concerns. That doesn't feel like the way it would go down. It would be, and if it did go down that way, you know, it would be like a 1 week, 2 week thing versus, you know, if he tears his ACL trying to escape a pocket, or if he gets his leg rolled up on funny from some other, you know, some lineman getting pancaked or something, that is going to be that's a lot more concerning. Steezo says Chad Beebe catches multiple touchdowns. I love it. Chad Beebe got one good catch. He's getting some separation underneath. He's getting some more run here, but I kind of think that with, he's almost overtaking BC Johnson a little bit, who's not having a very good year. But I think with the way that the Lions cover, the stars are going to be able to kind of feast in this game. Like the Thielen and the Jefferson is going to be able to feast. And of course, you know, they've had struggle. There are plenty of struggles in run defense as well. So you're going to have to, like, they won't need to turn to Chad Beebe very much. This is a great prediction for when they, like, if they still had Darius Slay and you knew somebody was going to get shut down and then it's going to like come to role players. This is how you get like a weird amount of like CJ Ham touchdowns against the Lions. Like he gets that kind of thing. So yeah, I love it because he is playing, he's getting separation and he hasn't been dropping this year. So it might be the year for, you know, Chad Beebe to finally kind of come out and be the role player we want him to be. Multiple touchdowns, very bold. Rich says DJ won him 4 sacks. I think we've had that before. We had Jalen Holmes 4 sacks last time. Jalen Holmes was going into his first start in the post Unique Ngakoue trade. He didn't have a great game, but he did get there eventually. DJ won him 4 sacks would be pretty incredible against this line, and it would definitely be. I give it to you. Like DJ won him got like 2 sacks. I would give this to you. 4 sacks, of course, is a like stunning game, but I would give you like 2 sacks with this, or even if he got 4 pressures, I think that like I would bet under 4 pressures for DJ Wonnum. Gabrielle Greco says Marvin Jones finally gets shadowed properly by our cornerbacks after years of doing whatever he wanted and has 0 catches. So Marvin Jones has owned Xavier Rhodes. He even owned Xavier Rhodes in Indianapolis. He got a touchdown against him there last week. Now, here's the problem. You said shadowed properly by our cornerback, so he won't be shadowed, right? The Vikings aren't shadowing this year. They don't have any horses that are good enough to shadow. But the idea of, you know, finally gets covered properly after years of doing whatever he wanted, has 0 catches. I wouldn't game plan to do this. I would not, like, focus on Marvin Jones like he's Devontae Adams, because Marvin Hall is a decent enough threat. TJ Hawkinson's a decent enough threat. Like, I think the Lions receiving corps is too good to, like, pay that much attention to someone. But hey, maybe Jeff Gladney just, like, turns it on and, like, wins a bunch of contested balls and keeps Marvin Jones out of the house. That would be pretty awesome. Kurt with 2 C's says the Lions defense is responsible for 14 points against the Vikings via Cousins. So you snookered yourself, Kurt, because the defense can't kick extra points. So you need 2 touchdowns and a safety for this to come in, which makes it extra bold. But yeah, okay, I totally get this one, right? Like the offensive line falls apart. You know, they've got like this resurgent Everson Griffin who gets a dumb strip sack or something, and he throws a stupid interception to like Jeff Okuda, who finally gets on it. Like, I totally could see this one happening, though. But you also need the safety, which also not out of the cards. The Vikings have had a bunch of safeties early in the year, and it's still something I fear deeply. Landon Renly says this week it's going to be a Chase Daniels and Kirk shootout, 8 total passing touchdowns and 500 total air yards. So I think it's like unlikely for Chase Daniels to play. If you listen to Matt Derry from yesterday, the odds that Stafford is in this one is like better than 50%, I would say. But yeah, a shootout of 8 total passing touchdowns and 500 air yards between the two quarterbacks would be a lot. 500 total yards is like actually just a reasonable offensive game between two, but total air yards is different. That's taking away screens. It's taking away anything. You know, if you throw a 30-yard pass and they run for another 30 and it's a 60-yard touchdown, you only get 30 air yards for that. So 500 air yards would be quite a bit. I do think in spirit, this is how the game's going to go. I don't think it's going to be Chase Daniels, and I don't know if 500 air yards is doable, but I love where your head's at. And the final one comes from Max Short, who says, Everson has a career high in sacks and offsides penalties. I love the dichotomy here. Career high in sacks. So I looked in, he's had a couple of 3 sacks games in his career. So it would be a career high would be 4 sacks or 3.5. And penalties, so I couldn't find any data that like divides it up by type of penalty, but he has never had a game. This actually stunned me. Everson Griffin has never had a game where he's had more than 2 penalties in his whole career. He's always had either 2 or less. So 3 offsides penalties. I will give it to you just 3 penalties in general, because I don't know if the games that I looked. I mean, he's definitely had games with more than with 2 offsides penalties. So I guess, yeah, 3 offsides penalties would be the thing. He's had a ton of games with 2 penalties, but never 3. It's always been 1 or 2, which is kind of funny. And it's just been very often 1 or 2. But that is the week of Locked On Vikings. We'll be back next week to wrap up what happens in this Lions game, talk about any other COVID things that happen. Of course, that's also a thing we've had to watch, although they've been practicing, haven't seen any positives. So that should be good to go for at least this game. But in the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And of course, this show is brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watching. I'll see y'all next week. And as always, Skol.